Whenever the chair was
in.
Thank you.
Start nominating Chairperson, but I suppose proposal of the week.
I think you should support Honorable Shwedu.
Thank you very much. Without wasting your time, we have one item on the agenda that's presentation by Love Life. I don't know if social development want to open briefly, a statement or anything, or will they conclude at the end of the presentation?
Yeah.
Okay. And we will take it from there. Can I give over to the leader of the delegation of Love Life?
I'm sorry, Chair. Chair, I'm giving you a comment here before they can start with their presentation. According to the agenda of today and according to the program of the Portfolio Committee of Social Development, we were told that, or we requested Love Life to come and do their presentation on the annual report and their program. But only this morning, they we only received the copy of their annual report, of which it makes us so difficult for us to scrutinize the report, the annual report that is just being presented to us before in this house now.
The presentation is okay. I think the fact that we at least we've received the presentation is fine, and they gave us the annual report. I don't think there's a major problem with that, because we didn't really resolve in 1 week around our discussion. The problem we had the last time was the fact that we received presentations late, and since this is not the case, I don't think that is a problem. Honourable Mokopana?
Chairperson, the department is funded Love Life 14 million. And it will be difficult to analyze the program that was being given to us by this document, because you need to link the program with what with the money. So presently there's nothing that we can do. That is a problem. But what you can say is a mistake, but you can go forward with the presentation. But it is wrong, because for us to do the justice on this oversight, we need to know this is how much is being funded for, this is what they are doing. That is what we're supposed to have had for your chairperson.
Honourable Kupani, I differ with you, because you are making this comment without giving Love Life the benefit of the doubt in terms of the presentation. Because at my glance at the presentation, you have your charts, your graphs, your references to funding. So, and that is the purpose of a presentation, is to inform. So let's give over to Love Life. And I'm sure you can also then just refer in terms of cross-referencing to the annual report. Over to you.
Chair, can I just come in here, please?
Yes. Is this on this matter? Because
it is on this matter.
I already made my announcement.
Yes, but I would like to state to, and I'd like it to be noted, that annual reports cannot be given to us the morning of the meeting. There are things that we need to scrutinize in annual reports.
You are to quote Honourable Mbalamula, I already made a ruling on this matter. They are not in terms of the budget vote of the department, obliged in terms of the law to report us.
Chair, okay. Though they are getting money from state funds.
Out of order.
Honourable Chairperson and the members of the Portfolio Committee, thank you very much for having us this morning, allowing us to share information on that life, I think, that successes and challenges. I have a small confession to make, and that is that after we had sent the presentation to Parliament, we met with the department and decided to change the order of the presentation a little bit. None of the content is new. All of the content that is presented is in the presentation. But we just thought that some of the academic content we have to put at the end and not in the beginning. So I'm going to go on with the presentation, and if the schools are to change it back around, we have that, those, all of those slides. My name is Grace Matabe, and I'm the Chief Executive Officer of Love Life. So just in terms of background, we want to just share a little bit of the background when NAPLAC was established, what we've been doing all these years, give you a sense of the evolution of an organization in response to the changing picture of HIV in the country. And then we will share the detail of our achievements the last year, some of the challenges, the source of funding, and everything else that members would like to know will be available to answer all your questions. So in terms of the history of Love Life, the conversations, the discussions about the establishment of Love Life started between 1997 and 1999, where there was a consensus among some civil society organizations to initiate an HIV prevention program targeting young people, in particular in South Africa. And MOU was signed between the Kaiser Family Foundation, which was the founding donor, and the South African government to create a large-scale HIV prevention program for young people. And Love Life has been promoting healthy HIV-free living among South Africans since September of 1999. And we had a relationship established with the Department of Health and the Department of Social Development to help scale up Love Life in 2005 with significant funding from those two departments. Since inception, Love Life has combined sustained nationwide multimedia with community-level outreach and support programs. In 2004, we had an evaluation conducted of Love Life, which showed us that while media was an important part of the work of Love Life, that is not where we're getting the greatest returns on investment in terms of behavior change. And that led to scaling up of outreach and support programs and scaling down of media. Thereafter, the campaign continued to focus on addressing the individual as well as the social drivers of the HIV epidemic, with a specific focus on the structural drivers of risk, like violence, and low education, unemployment, etc. And that is when we launched our latest campaign, the Make Your Move campaign, in 2008. That is just a presentation of the functional organogram of Love Life, really showing you Love Life is under the fiduciary leadership of the Board of Trustees. We have four key departments: the finance division, marketing and fundraising division, research and programs division, as well as human resources. And that is the detail of all of the departments.
Just
We added
this one at the request of DFD, because it's in the annual report. But when we gave them the presentation, they thought that we
needed to. You see, what you need to do, because you are saying you're adding, you've added new pages or new slides. Either you give us it or you refer us to the annual report. But you can't just speak to a presentation and not even tell us this is not in our packs. You see, that comes with changing presentations. And I'm actually really disappointed in social development, because that was precisely the fight we had within the last portfolio for maternity. You say you can't change a presentation and not bring the change copies to the meeting. So just how many slides of a presentation do we not have?
There will be... It's very, very few. It won't even be five.
It's already too sorry, Chair, for me to come in that outline, because I don't have in my package. We can't work like this.
Okay, can we please add those... can we please add over the presentation of the files to the secretary? We'll then take a break, and we will copy the files for the members, please.
Chairperson, can we proceed with our second item? Meanwhile, they are looking for the copies. Remember, we said...
The issue of the names.
Yeah, okay, yeah. The issue of the names.
Okay, let's do that. Okay. I'll wait. Honourable members, we are supposed to have three names for the MDG program for the 5th to the 6th of September. Can we now consider that those notes?
Honorable Lamula will attend on the GA on behalf of the Democratic Alliance.
Then,
sorry,
yes, Honorable Tsete will attend on the ANC.
So we will have three members.
One member of the Cope. Yes, one member of Cope and one member
of the Cope.
Chair, the chairperson is already there.
Yes.
I didn't give you permission. She went to cut the curtain.
Shepherd, do you mind if I leave this here?
No, not at
all. Yes.
But you need to keep on checking. The program can change at the last minute.
We submitted to the Higher Education Committee, and
Even
to get the information you want, it's difficult. The application form, the application form sometimes you try to check, and the owners, refer, when you call, they refer to the website. But I prefer to go there personally.
I like it because I met this one lecturer that is lecturing and was as master student. He's from Dar es Salaam. And easy to know the master's projects very good. Something like doing the modules and then the annual thesis.
Yeah, I know. even when we say chaplaincy, I went there because I wanted to apply.
So you go to admin lab to get your application there. That's it.
And that's, I don't know, yeah, and they choose to say.
So what's on the book there?
I don't know, maybe, I don't know, I'm not sure. Because I'm waiting, I'm just, I'm not sure, the truth is very good.
The police will never know.
Thanks.
But is it out of talk? One is going to talk. Yeah, I'm telling you out of talk. They just cannot keep quiet all of them. Did they get it?
No, not yet. Is that Paulus? Paulus not just
anymore.
How was the funeral? The funeral has been huge.
Oh, it was like a
What's happening at the people's colour? Which date is it?
Sure, it's also the 12th, no?
14.
You must still identify places to go to this day. Two places.
For the committee?
I'm not going to check the development. It's all coming in. The message of the Kafka oversight is it's parliament programs, not community
Last day we didn't have it, and then we have it every year. Which area is the
Hi,
Chaplain. Yeah. 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 Yeah
I said it was his funeral, though.
His funeral, yeah. Only I was trying to attend one in
Ashwini. I said funeral on Thursday again.
And who goes to the funeral? Akaji, you have to stay until after the washing of the hands. And I like funeral
feathers. Maybe you're the
one. I like funeral feathers.
You like what, darling? You like what, so you have to have it again.
No,
don't say it again.
She likes the food.
That's all the place you get that food. It's one of the devil. So there's a good for
my. And after eating there.
Oh, after my hair, suddenly.
No, you don't stop food. Stop. We need to choose something. We eat a bit of an iron cap, right? That's my cabbage, my coat, my... What's wrong with like the food? Thank you.
I like them too.
Ah,
and when I ate from the camera, I don't eat it too.
But one thing, I never go for seconds. I don't.
But you have a scapting. Wait, you get your
scapting. That scapting is a second. Is it? But I think it's a
wine.
Yeah, you're not good enough. You're not good enough. I've never seen anything.
I know. Come on,
you can't even laugh loud in this place because I often think of stuff.
And you put a website
I got a
website. I'm sorry, the winner of
the thing is going to stick to a great benefit. There are so many under. But our duty is to look at the social economy and so much.
It means
so what you do is to say you get so much funding. It's not us too.
The infection rate has come down, the transmission rate, a certain age cohort. From
I
gather that you now have you've given us the amended version. Now, we stopped at the one of them. On what page is that? It's page 3. Okay, now I have to look at the three other glasses because it's so small. Can you enlarge that thing first? I'm going to ask the committee secretary after this meeting just to make put every slide on one page for us in terms of printing, and you just distribute it to members of Pigeon House, because it will be very difficult for us with for vision challenge, that is visually challenged to read. So maybe you should just walk us through this thing. Over to you.
And thank you very much, Honorable Chair. And I must apologize again for that misunderstanding. This is an important opportunity for us to share the work of LoveLife with the community. And I'm sorry that it was affected by not having planned properly in that regard. So that is the structure of LoveLife. That's the functional organism of LoveLife. And each one of these divisions have a large team or significant teams of people that are working on this mandate. This one shows the geographic presence of LoveLife, really presenting an opportunity for us both to monitor our scale-up to ensure that we reach as many young people as possible, but also to ensure that that scale-up is targeted in the provinces and communities that need the services of LoveLife. And this one looks at
USB.
Okay, so the geographic presence showing the scaling up of LoveLife in the past 10 years to up to 880 communities. And this one looks at the summary of our performance in terms of reach. We have a total of 9,452 peer educators. This was in 2010. And made up of 1,447 groundbreakers. These are young people that are recruited on a one-year contract to work in communities across the country, facilitating the work of LoveLife, together with 8,005 teachers in 2010. And these are young people that work with them, that could be in school, but mostly are between ages of 18 and 25 and out of school. These young people work in youth-friendly clinics. That's a partnership we have with the Department of Health, and we work in 532 clinics across the country. We work in 6,520 schools. This is in 2010 again. We have go-go getters who are grandmothers that work with young people who are vulnerable, 500 across the country. We have community partnerships with NGOs, 380. We have multi-purpose youth centers called LoveLife Y Center, 18 of them, with an additional 2 presently in construction. We have LoveLife Games, which is a school sport, and in fact, it's more than school sports. It's a healthy lifestyle and sports program that involves schools and young people out of school. We have a youth helpline, 3 helplines within the LoveLife. And one is for youth, another one is for parents, and another one is one that we use to support the go-go getters that work with all the children. And we also reach young people through festivals and events. Our total reach is 1.5 million enrollments in life skills educational programs. We have a total of 760,000 callers and to the call center, both the parent line and the youth line. And we've had young people who've participated in our site events, 1.7 million across the country. All of that is supported by sustained media, on radio, on television, print, web, and on the mobile phone. I just would like to share in a video format, because it's going to give you a very quick understanding of the detail of the work of LoveLife, so that the rest of the presentation is understandable to you.
Thank you. Ensuring that implementers receive the highest quality training. The Love Train is a Y Center on wheels, sharing the vibe with isolated communities. The biggest school sports and lifestyle event in South Africa, the Love Life Games, unites 200,000 learners annually and equips teachers and coaches with skills.
We've got so many activities. We've got drama, ultimate dance, soccer, volleyball. Everyone wants to participate.
It's not just about HIV. EnviroWise empowers young people with skills to join the green economy. 500 man-mothers, known as go-go-getters, provide support to more than 6,000 orphaned and vulnerable youth, ensuring that they are safe, in school, are not hungry, and have access to social grants. Trained counselors provide free sexual health information and counseling to those calling in on the toll-free helplines.
One of my worst calls was when one of our callers, who was HIV positive, wanted to commit suicide using a gun. At first it was difficult for me to deal with him, but at the end I managed to convince him to give that gun to his mom.
In addition, you can send a free Please Call Me that allows the call center to link back to anyone in need of help.
Sometimes you do not have data, and there are too many people at the public phone. So when you need help, you can still get it.
Ongoing communication within families and communities is key. The Born Free Dialogues keep these channels open. Love Life's programs are closely monitored across the country. By tracking its impact over time, not only on attitudes and self-reported risk behavior, but also on HIV and sexually transmitted infections, Love Life can refine and develop its program as young people's needs change. 40% of our population is younger than 15 years. Prevalence of HIV among 15 to 24-year-olds has declined significantly over the past 3 years to 8.7%, while the rate of new HIV infection among teenagers has halved since 2002. Love Life supports a generation of young people who are complete within themselves, creative in response to life challenges, and connected to a network of opportunity. Love Life. Make your move.
Right. So that is just a brief background on Love Life. The next part I want to talk about is just making the case for why Love Life targets young people and focusing a little bit on the state of the HIV epidemic today. As stated in the corporate videos, one of the reasons why it's important to target young people in HIV prevention is because half of our population is under the age of 25. So the biggest part of the population is young. And if we're able to achieve any change with the highest number of people, we'll be able to make significant changes at population level. The second reason is that despite some decrease in the number of new HIV infections, the main spike of infection still occurs among young people. So between the ages of 15 and 25, that is where you get the most, up to about 1 in 3 young women being infected. So clearly, the opportunity lies in us getting to as many young women before that age where the odds of infection increase as much as possible, so that we reduce the odds of infection for more of them to get into young adulthood being negative. This slide here just captures condom use as an important indicator of whether behavior is changing or not. And our position is that it's a lot more than about knowledge. Despite the fact that many, many young people have adequate knowledge about HIV, you still see a lot of new infections. What this slide shows is that condom use at last sex peaks at age 16. So by the time they are 16, young people, 60% in this particular instance, which is based on a study that was released in 2004, it shows that by the time they reach 16, 60% of young women are already using condoms. What is difficult is that, and if this was just about knowledge, is that unfortunately that graph goes in the opposite direction. So if it was about knowledge, the older they get, the more knowledgeable they should get, which means the more condom use there should be. But we see that the older they get, the less condoms are used. And that is the challenge for us in behavior change-focused HIV prevention. Another important issue to focus that informs the strategy and approach of Love Life is that we see that it's an unequal society, marginalized people within society, that seem to be at greatest risk of HIV infection. What this graph shows is that the highest prevalence of HIV is in urban informal communities. And obviously that informs the fact that it is in the context of that urban informal community that we see the actual drivers of risk. The second thing that this graph shows is that the increase in infection seems to be in rural, formal, in farms. So while the prevalence is high in urban informal communities, farms are on an increase when other, like urban communities, are on a decline in terms of prevalence. And as you can see, this is all data that comes from the three surveys that HSRC released from 2002. So be that as it may, what we also see is that young people are showing the way. Young people are beginning to change behavior. There is a lot of self-reported behavior change. But more than self-reported behavior change is that we've begun to see a significant decline in the incidence, in the number of new HIV infections among young people. And as you can see, this is a graph that shows the incidence in single-year age bands, and giving us a good sense of the ages. So, you know, to an extent, what you can do is zoom into age 17, for example, and you can see that there was the incidence of HIV in 2002 among 17-year-olds was 1.3 out of every 100 for in 2002, and in 2008 you're seeing 0.8 for every 100. So it gives you a sense that there is a decline in new infections in the age group that is most at risk. What this one does is actually even give you a better indication of where the actual changes are. If you look at the table underneath the graph, you see that in the years between 2002 and 2005, the overall incidence for people between the ages of 15 and 49 was 2 out of 100. And in 2005 to 2008, that dropped to 1.3. But what is even more significant is that the age group and age profile, that is the profile of people, young people, that is more at risk, as I stated earlier, you'll see that and that is the 15 to 24 on the women column. And there's the graph on top of it just to make the point I'm making. Between 2002 and 2005, there was the incidence of 5.5 for every 100 people of new infection, which is very, very high among women between the ages of 15 and 24. And in 2005 to 2008, you see that dropping to 2.2. So this is numbers. But these are numbers that are giving us a good sense of where we stand with HIV as a country, and in particular, where the hope lies with regards to young people and young women who are at risk. So we think that if we could do it at this point, we can do it again, and we're hopeful that we will see returns on investment. This one just really gives you a sense of how Love Life approaches HIV prevention. We focus on the individual factors, really looking at addressing attitudinal and knowledge gaps in schools through massive outreach programs, among young people, through massive outreach programs. Secondly, behavior change within a society that doesn't change is not sustainable. So a lot of our focus is also on social change, and there, using sustained media and youth leadership initiatives to focus on entrenching the social norms that will reduce risk. And then, of course, what we've realized is that despite self-reported behavior change, you find that young people in contexts that don't give them a sense of choice still give in to risk to some extent. So it's important to us that we focus on the structural drivers of risk, ensuring that we deliver youth-friendly clinical services, psychosocial support for orphans and vulnerable children, career guidance, ensuring that young people stay in school, make sure that they participate and so on, and in sports. And then one of the things that has shown a great promise is all of the growth in knowledge about biomedical interventions. One of the biomedical interventions that existed for a very long time is condom use. We know that the condoms are very protective. If you use a condom, you protect it from, to a very large extent, from infection. But there have been a lot of other new biomedical information that has been evolving, including a treatment for prevention. And we see that all of these things are not at odds. They come together to form a comprehensive response to HIV prevention. What this graph, this model shows is really trying to explain the theory of change of love life. What we believe is that it is really a cluster of social and economic factors that predict high-risk behavior. And so on the one hand, you've got individual, and these are not finite levels. I mean, it can be all kinds of other individual factors at play. But we're just picking out a few like low self-esteem, no sense of future, uncertain and identity, you know, young people that are not grounded in who they are and so on. Within a context, or a social context, or a normative context of coercion, lack of parental communication, a male sense of entitlement, or young women feeling under pressure to show their womanhood by bearing children. And within a broader context of poverty and low education, what we see is that the individual factors lead to a sense of helplessness in the sense young people who have a low self-esteem, they feel helpless in the face of challenges. And the context that is defined by pressures of coercion and so on leads to, you know, a sense of pressure to conform. And within an environment of poverty and low education, marginalization and inequality lead to a sense of constraint choices. And what we see is that all of these things come together, and despite knowledge about HIV, leads to high risk tolerance. So what we see is that this is what informs Love Life's approach, because what we target is risky behavior, but we're also targeting tolerating risk. Knowing and understanding risk, but not having the drive to do something about it, protecting yourself. That is an important part of the approach of Love Life. So this slide here really was our attempt at looking at ways of aligning the work of Love Life with the priorities of social development. And we identified two programs, Program 3 and Program 4. With regards to Program 3, which is to invest in and ensure the provision of sound social welfare services to children, including those in need of care, our Gogo Geta program that looks at reducing the risk among orphaned and vulnerable children fits in quite nicely within that. With regards to strengthening and supporting and strengthening family and community through interventions that foster social cohesion, our Bond Free Dialogues, which are the program that encourages open conversation and communication between generations within the home, as well as community dialogues that encourage community level conversations, largely that, not only intergenerational, but really also bringing young people into those conversations. Those two programs not only look at participation of young people and other citizens in community issues, but they also ensure that there is intergenerational understanding. With regards to Program 4, which is to reduce the incidence of and minimize the psychosocial impact of HIV and AIDS in order to achieve the goals and targets of the National Strategic Plan for HIV, AIDS, TB and malaria, and expand the HIV and AIDS program and MNE using relevant indicators. The groundbreaker program, basically all of Love Life, is geared towards achieving that goal. Implementing youth programs that assist youth to access work and participate participate in the mainstream economy. Our groundbreaker program, our pinship program, the alumni is a program of maintaining contact with groundbreakers that have been through the Love Life program, ensuring that we link them with opportunity, both for further education, for positions, and as well as the ongoing leadership participation in their own communities. The MEMSTAR, which is a cell phone-based program that, you know, among other things, have a database that we update every month that young people access that that is of positions that become available, bursaries, and all of that information that is of use to young people that do not normally have access to internet, which most young people would have. But MEMSTAR makes that access broader among young people that are in a disadvantaged community. So that is the brief overview of Love Life. Now I'd like to just share the detail of the annual report 2010 and all the achievements that, you know, in terms of the indicators that we've identified. So in 2010, this is just a summary of that. In 2010, there were 880 sites across the country, those little dots on the map across the country, of Love Life's presence. 60% of that presence is youth-friendly clinics in partnership with the Department of Health, and 20% is the social franchise program involving non-governmental organizations, a lot of whom already work with the Department of Social Development. 80% is Love Life outlets. Love Life outlets can be schools in communities that don't have a lot of NGOs and CBOs. They can also be faith-based organizations that are from churches and so on, and they account for 18%. And 2% is the Love Life Y Centers, and a few of them we've seen in the corporate video. What this one shows is the provincial breakdown of all those sites, where they are in terms of the kind of the different types of sites. And so, if you look at this, you'll see that the Eastern Cape has the highest number of Love Life presence, and followed by Limpopo, and then Western Cape and KwaZulu-Natal. This one shows, gives you that same information but focuses specifically on the sites that are in partnership with social development. And there, you know, I mean, the graph is pretty clear. The bottom there is how Love Life has divided the country for ease of management. And so, you know, we've used the districts, the political districts of South Africa. But in most of them, we've had to pull them together. And Love Life, for example, had one office for Chris Hani and Ukasamba district, and one office for Nelson Mandela, Kakadu, and the third one that's part of that, Mutewa and Harik, and so on. Basically, just ensuring, so there's a Love Life office in each one of those districts, and each one of them have that as the hubs, the sites that they work in and support. And each one of these have a groundbreaker in it, groundbreakers and infringes. And we've also, within the folders that we gave you, we're giving you a greater detail on that, giving you a database of all of these sites that we're talking about, with the groundbreakers in them, the address. Even so, we're giving you in provincial packages each one of these sites that we've reported on in this report. This basically shows then that the total number of sites that GSD funded is 302, and 40% of them are outlets, 55% are franchises, and 5% are outlets. Okay, so I showed you in the introductory part of the presentation that a concern for us is that the highest prevalence of HIV is in urban informal communities. And that the highest, you know, the areas where the graph is, the highest risk, where the risk is going up rather than going down, and like other communities, is on farms. And so for that reason, we just pruned a little bit of the farming communities where we work. And you can see there that the highest number of farming communities we work in is in Mpumalanga, and followed by the Eastern Cape and the Northwest. We had difficulty with Limpopo because most of the sites there, within Limpopo you have subsistence farming. So we were unable to actually separate that data. So most of the sites in Limpopo have farming linked to it. And even though, you know, not really being farmed. So it was difficult to capture with the indicators that we have. So this is not a perfect information to share with you, but it's an important indicator between us and the Department of Social Development and one that we want to track. This one shows you the number of groundbreakers that we've reached in partnership with DSD specifically. Groundbreakers are funded both by DSD and the Department of Social Development as well as by the Department of Health. In total, the groundbreakers that we have with social development is 590. And most of those are in the Sisonke Ethekwini district of KwaZulu-Natal, and as you can see, and followed by the Uthukela Ilembe district, also of KwaZulu-Natal. And this one shows the pinches that we work with, and this is the total number of the pinches across the country. And as you can see there, we have just a little bit of an advantage, almost a 50-50 split, but a little bit of advantage of female pinches. And in 2010, we had 8,005 across the country. What we find in Lovelife is that the most productive province we've got is Limpopo. They seem to be the ones that are able to reach the highest number of participants in programs. They have the highest numbers of Mpinchi. So the productivity level within Limpopo is very good. And as you can see, the lower numbers is like Northern Cape, but Northern Cape is a factor of the population size. This one looks at Mpinchis but focus on the Mpinchis that are specific within the sites that are funded by social development. And again, you see that the highest number of, there's 2,800 of them, 803, and that you see the highest number of them are in the Sisonke Ethekwini district. So another thing that we track is the number, so Lovelife focusing on 12 to 19 year old young people. We found that the way to get to that age group of young people is to go into schools. And so it was important as part of tracking our reach, our expansion, the extent to which we're scaling up in the communities that we want to. So it was important to track the number of schools we're able to gain access to. And again, the most productive province in terms of the schools that they registered within the Lovelife program is Limpopo, followed by KwaZulu-Natal and then the Eastern Cape. And the pie chart there on the right basically gives a little bit of a detail of the types of schools that we work in. And as you can see that the schools for disabled young people and farm schools are still very, very low. So it's a priority for us to grow in those areas. The highest number of schools we work in is older young people within the primary schools. And you see when we look at the age disaggregation of the young people that participate in Lovelife, that many of them are between the ages of 12 and 14. And so the highest number of schools is primary schools, obviously, followed by the secondary schools, and there's a high number that did not specify, and a few of them will probably be combined schools. And this one just, you know, gives the greater detail. It just becomes important for us to give you a bigger picture on Lovelife and then give you the information on the ones that are specifically funded by social development. And this is just the detail of the total number of schools linked to the social development sites. Okay, so this one starts going into young people reached, and as I said, Limpopo reaches the highest number of young people at 300,000 in total. These are young people that participate in sustained face-to-face program, what we call in one slide educational life skills program. Some of these are modular programs, so they would be have a minimum of 10 sessions of contact with one young person in a sustained manner. That is the breakdown on the 1.5 young people that participate in those modular programs within the club. And this is the age distribution I was talking about, and as you can see, most of them in 2010, 41% was 12 to 14 year olds, and 33% was 15 to 17 year olds, with a few on the other side of the Love Life focus age band. Okay, so this basically gives the detail. So the workshops that we're talking about, the educational programs that we're talking about, take place in teams. So we register those teams as well as registering the participants so that we get a good sense of the reach, really trying to track the detail of the reach as much as possible. And what this does is show that team breakdown in the Love Life regions based on the performance of each region of Love Life. Okay, so this one looks at giving a little more detail in the site-based events. The site-based events could be things like talks, presentations, sometimes it could be little conversations that happen around the batch structure, conversations that happen around the sports field and so on, mini championships and, you know, face-to-face. It could be any other event that is not a large-scale event like a festival or a sports event, but it's not part of the sustained modular-based interaction. And that is where we have a total participants of 1.7 million, and that is the provincial breakdown of the site-based events. Most of the site-based events, again, we find in Limpopo. And these ones, this is out of that 1.7 million, the site-based events that happen only in the DSD funded sites. This one looks at the bond-free dialogues, the intergenerational conversation between parents and children facilitated by Love Life Groundbreakers and Gogo Gekka. And you can see one of the things that the Bond Free Dialogues program, the point of the Bond Free Dialogues is to facilitate intergenerational conversations. And one of the things that we struggled with is to get a good balance between parents and children participating in these Bond Free Dialogues. And it was quite good to note in 2010 that we're beginning to get that balance right. And quite happy about, for example, the balance that the Free State has, which means we've got a good number of parents and young people within the same room with facilitated conversations that are useful for reducing risk, as we understand. And this one looks at the Gogo Getters and the Gogo Getters' own performance and reach. We have 500 Gogo Getters across the country. The difficulty we have with the Gogos, unlike what we have with the Groundbreakers and other young people, is that there's a lot of turnover and participation, you know, so Gogos, to get to that 500, probably only noted one month. From then, you will have the number fluctuating between about 460 to about 490 and so on, as Gogos move in and out of the program. But that gives you a good sense of the provincial spread of the Gogo Getter program, as well as on the right-hand side, the number of orphaned and vulnerable children are supported by those Gogos. And obviously the graphs are almost similar because, you know, the productivity is pretty much flat, similar across the province. This one looks at the reach of the call center, the two helplines, The youth line reaches 760,000. That's what we reached in 2010. What we've seen with the call center is that in the beginning, about 5 years ago, we used to have a demand of about 300,000 calls to the Love Life call center a month. And the number of calls we were able to handle in that period was about 50% of that, just based on the capacity. And as the cell phone based use goes up, we've seen a decline in the number of calls. But this still does give you, the call centers, we still have landline calls, we still have people that want to talk to somebody who are not just going to use the cell phone interaction. And so the youth line has had the 760 and the parent line has about 29,000 calls in 2010. The kinds of calls that come is for example, they range among, on the parent line we get calls like, I have a 15-year-old teenager that needs to act up, I think they're sexually active, how do I deal with this? How do I start to have a conversation? So they range from that to, on the youth line, I have a boyfriend, he says he'll leave me if I don't have sex with him, or, the kinds of problems that adolescents struggle with. And the problems that if not helped, if the adolescents are not helped, with could just become something big, and the call centers are there to ensure that that doesn't happen. So that's just the achievements there in terms of the reach of the helpline. That gives a provincial breakdown of the callers by province, and in fact I already alluded to the reasons for calling. As you can see, the relationships is a big one. 28% of the callers call about relationship issues. HIV and AIDS specifically, what is HIV, how do I know, and so on, that kind of detail, about 14%. Information on Love Life and wanting information of the nearest site to them so that they could participate, and so on, 19% careers and all that. So that gives you that detail. The highest number of callers are in Gauteng, followed by the Eastern Cape, it looks like. We just have not had as many calls. Traditionally, we've had very few calls from the Western Cape compared to the others, and really just in terms of the population size, Northern Cape is also among the lower provinces. So in terms of these implementation challenges, we've had difficulty with access to funds. The difficulties range from just finding access, finding a place for groundbreakers to interact with groups of young people within a farming environment, to sometimes even getting permissions from farmers to access people on the farm. Access to farms has been a bit of a challenge, but as we said, one that we felt was important enough to continue to pursue. Finding community partners in informal settlements has also been a challenge. So these are the two most important indicators for Love Life, because of what I said about the highest risk being in urban informal communities, as well as the increase in risk on farms. We also have difficulty with regards to monitoring time lag. We have Love Life is, what was important after the evaluation of Love Life in 2004 was to build on what was shown to work, and face-to-face interaction is what was shown to work. And so as we reduced media and increased the scale of Love Life across the country, the time that it takes to get information on the activities of Love Life from some of the far-flung communities to the central office where we analyze, we capture all of this data and analyze it and report, it often takes a lot of time. And so this is one of our serious challenges that sometimes could affect reporting and times of reporting. And to try and deal with this, we are now working with a company that is looking to pilot data capturing using cell phones. So that we reduce, we get at least data capturing to be as real time as possible. Unpredictable cash flow has also been difficult, with many periods of the Love Life team having to do without cash at hand because of some delays, sometimes because of the delays in reporting and therefore delays of cash outflows. Mpintshi's groundbreakers are young people who are on a year's contract and stipend with Love Life. Mpintshi's, in most cases, are volunteers for these young people, except one or two provinces where we've had a partnership for some stipends for Mpintshi's. So retention for Mpintshi's is a little bit of a challenge. It's not one... So the point, I must just qualify that to say what's important to us is that young people are encouraged to participate in the communities that they are in as volunteers for the program. And that's what the Mpintshi's do. But that, as a result of that participation, we also link them with opportunity. So while I may say that Mpintshi retention is a problem, very often we get Mpintshi's from the community. If an employer comes to us and say they're looking for young people to employ, we take the Mpintshi's and put them and link them with opportunity, because that's a much, much, I mean, the point of it is that they are not on a stipend, and their participation is as youth leaders in their communities, and it's important to link them with those opportunities. In some provinces, like in the Western Cape, we've also had an experience of during the cycles of the farming season, the Mpintshi's would leave and be temporary workers, laborers on farms. And so you have those cycles that are just difficult to manage, but that's just one of those challenges we've got. And then finding the right balance between a multimedia campaign and sustained face-to-face outreach. This is an important one because in the last 5 years, we have a sense in Love Life that we have achieved much, much more than we managed in the first 5 years. And yet, Love Life's visibility in the first 5 years was much, much more than what we've had in the last 5 years. So basically, we had to take from the media budget to invest in what we believe gives the returns on investment. And that sort of gives a sense of a Love Life that is no longer visible. And yet, that is what is giving us returns on investment. So we need to find the balance so that there continues to be a national media presence that creates demand for young people to participate in Love Life, making them feel that they're part of something big and visible and energetic. And that is the balance that we've got to find and we will find it. So this probably is the last but one section that is just looking at the future of HIV prevention for young people based on Love Life's understanding and our experiences of the past period. Just as a summary, we just wanted to go through very quickly what we know prevents HIV, and these are the things that have very, very solid evidence out there. Male condom use is 95% efficacy, and when you talk about protection, the most important thing is to ensure that those young people, firstly, obviously, that young people wait till they are older to be sexually active, and obviously those that choose to or have to or do have sex, that condom use is consistent. Condom use is in randomized controlled trials has been shown to be just 95% protection. And female condoms also estimated 95% when used consistently. The complexity is that there's low uptake of female condoms. It was positioned in the market in a negative way, so all of us have a sense of female condoms as loud and uncomfortable and so on. And so really the uptake of female condoms has been very difficult and a little unpopular. Medical male circumcision has also been shown to reduce female-male HIV transmission. It has some complications with regards to the protection of females. I mean, there are serious concerns with regards to the protection of females, but the randomized control trials have proven 60% efficacy of male medical male circumcision. And there are some complexities with regards to that, but we see an opportunity, particularly among young people that fall within Love Life's target age of 12 to 19 years. That is where you have the highest demand for circumcision. And so we see an opportunity there to build on information that gives young people, you know, information, content that is clear, that is open, but that is cool and hip that they identify with and create a sense that this is something that they've got to do, to consider doing, obviously with the participation of their parents. However, the concern is that if it's not communicated properly, that it could also lead to behavioral disinhibition, where young people would think that because I'm circumcised, I no longer need to use a condom. So the point, the issue for us today is just to get it right. Treatment of sexually transmitted infections, and this is one of those things where we really have tried in South Africa, but we still have not had an environment where, we get people who need treatment for sexually transmitted infections in the clinic all the time in a consistent manner. So particularly among young people, hence Love Life's youth-friendly services program, just to get to the point where young people could be free and comfortable to access the health treatment if they need it. And then another important one is post-exposure prophylaxis that looks at treatment after exposure, immediate treatment after exposure to HIV, like in the event of rape and so on. This is the kind of content that is often not out there where people that need to access it can get it. So there's the issue of access, but there's also the issue of adherence. And this is very much part of a post-traumatic event intervention. And adherence becomes very difficult in the context of that post-trauma. So these are the things we know will help prevent HIV. But we also know that behavioral interventions have been shown to work. Participation in face-to-face HIV prevention program, and this particular one is based on the evaluation of Love Life that was done, that shows that participation in Love Life reduces the odds of infection to about 61%. We've also, there's growing evidence that young people who are in school report less risky sexual behavior. And in fact, among boys have lower rates of HIV than same age out of school peers. And so, as an organization whose focus is HIV prevention, it's important to us that we ensure that we contribute to the school detention. That is part of one of the difficulties we have in our country. That in fact, at that age where young people start becoming sexually active, at about grade 10, we see very high rates of school dropouts. So just helping to keep young people in school is the first step to get to reduce the risk of infection among young people. So we feel that combination prevention is necessary. All of these things that we say are out there are not completely 100% effective. So it requires, even biomedical things like treatment for prevention require adherence, condom use has to be correct and consistent and so on. And so we, in Love Life, we believe that even with the advent of the growth, even if there was a vaccine, it would be very, very important that we continue to package the information, make sure that for young people particularly, it's in a way that they interact with it, understand it, and can create demand. Significant inroads have been made, as we're saying. We've seen a significant increase in self-reported condom use among young men. And as you can see, in 2002, HSRC reported, and the confidence intervals are very short, so it's small, so it's quite solid information. 57 percent self-reported condom use, and in 2008 reported 87.4% self-reported condom use among young people. So young people are leading in change. And we've also seen that HIV prevalence among young men has been on a decline. So obviously there's a little bit of an overlap in the confidence. So we just look at comparing 2002 and 2008. Yeah, so that is that's basically just two slides I'm showing to get a sense that, you know, things are happening and we are cautiously hopeful about them. At the moment, I just put this slide in here just as a sense. At the moment, we've requested the Human Sciences Research Council to do another evaluation of Love Life, because we want to understand if we have impact, what are the areas where this impact is happening, what are the things that we have to build on to, what are the things we have to improve, and so on and so on. And because we want to invest where we have, you know, guarantee of greater returns on investment. And so the HSRC study is going to be, has two components, a qualitative as well as a quantitative component. We don't have the quantitative component. That will tell us whether we still have impact of reducing 60% of reducing risk the same way that that the study, the other study, 2004 by the RHRU showed us. But the qualitative study shows, for example, young people reporting positive thinking and hope as a result of their participation in Love Life. They report learning healthy sexual behavior. They report practicing safe sex as a result of their participation. They also report increased motivation and capacity to perceive and take opportunity after participation in Love Life. So so we just included that because it just gives you a certain indication of really the inspiration we'd like to be sharing with young people in South Africa. There are some upcoming evaluations that we are participating in. We have a small team of national communication programs in the country that is going to be conducting a communication survey in partnership with Soul City and the Johns Hopkins Devisa next year. And the point of that is to examine whether public health communication programs and messages have an impact in changing knowledge, attitude, norms, and behavior with regards to HIV and TB. And that's going to be across South Africa with a sample of 10,000 households. We're also going to be doing another, we did an evaluation of the Groundbreaker program area, and I think I might have information to share just a little bit on that. But we're going to be repeating the evaluation of the Groundbreaker program in 2012. And also we plan also for baseline studies and follow-up evaluations of the Y Center. So the one Y Center that could be completed hopefully by the end of this year, we want to do a baseline so that when the Y Center started, we know where this community of young people were in terms of the indicators of risk with that Y Center. So this one just focuses on what does South Africa get for investing in Love Life. Most of it we've already shared with you. The first one very strong association between interaction with Love Life's face-to-face program and lowering odds of HIV infections. But that is not all. There's broader social impact. We wanted to specify out the 2,500 temporary employment opportunities. I mean, in some months it was a little bit more than that, but that is the average. Temporary employment opportunities within Love Life, and that results in cash transfers to marginalized communities, as well as skills transfers for young people that participate in Love Life. An important data that we thought was important to share is that blue table there that shows, that looks at two indicators. The report is longer, it looks at a few other things, but these two we thought are most important. The first one is the participation in the Groundbreaker program, increasing the possibilities of post-matric qualification. That first column there looks at the South African average post-matric qualification it's sitting at 6% now. 6% of young people will continue and complete a degree or a diploma. Groundbreakers, before they participate in Love Life, sit at 8%. And after participation in Love Life, that grows up to 47%. So it's very much in keeping with the issue of hope and the inspiration that the qualitative studies begin to show. And in terms of employment, the South African youth average is sitting at about 2007. So we're sitting at 34%. The groundbreakers before participation in the program were at 12%, but groundbreakers after the program are sitting at 60%. This report is available, and in fact, the detail of the report is available. It was the study was conducted on by the CISA in 2007. The other thing I just wanted to share with you is we have implemented all the programs that we've been sharing with you at ever increasing scale. We said in 2004, after the release of the report by Arishari that showed us what it is that works, that we wanted to scale up and reach as many young people as we can. And what we've seen over the years is there has been, in terms of participants, young people that have been reached by the program, a 450% increase over the past 5 years. From 2006, where the young people that participated in the programs were 257 to 2010, and then the number of schools that they worked in has increased by 127%, and the number of community sites that we've worked in has also increased by 29% over the past 5 years. And what this one just shows is that same increase, but in relation to the cost of the program. So Love, the total budget of Love has basically stayed exactly the same over, in some instances, gone down in real terms, because sometimes there has not been inflationary increase to the money. But what that shows is that what we've been able to get per every young person, you know, it has cost Love Life to every young person, which has been going down from what it used to be about 600 in 2006 and to now just over 100 rand per young person in 2010. The last part is really to share with you the detail of who pays for Love Life. Most of this detail is in the annual report, all of this is in the annual report, and the detail of expenses and income is in the audited financial statements. But this just gives you a good sense of the sources of funding, with government being the biggest funder, and then some international foundations like the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, who actually helped fund the Gogo Getter program, and the Kaiser Family Foundation, and of course a few of the South African corporations, companies, and all of that. Other partnerships like the Royal Bafokeng Community for the Y Centre in Rustenburg in the Royal Bafokeng area, and you know, so it just gives you a sense of the sources of income for Love Life. This one really, you know, we could go into detail with it if it was necessary, but we wanted to just share a number of information. We wanted to share the information about what does DOH pay for, what does Sports and Recreation pay for, and what does DSD pay for, and that detail, so that it's clear, as well as give you a sense of how much it costs and what the support costs are, like your overheads, the admin costs, and what the program costs are. And so it excludes other funders. This is just the government department to give you that detail. And as I say, I'm able to answer any questions if there are any out of this. But that is the information. So thank you very much for your attention. That was very nice.
Very, very nice.
No, thank you. Department of Social Development, would you like to comment on the stuff on the issues that you are funding for Love Life? just gives us a sense of where we are satisfied with the services and the value for money issues.
Thanks. I will give it to Dr. Hanaha to comment on the problem. Dr. Hanaha is the Chief Director for HIV/AIDS in the Department of Social Development.
Thank you, Chairperson. To say that we have been funding Love Life from 2007 to the end, yes. And currently we're funding them as reflected there for 43 million. It started from about 35 million in 2007. Part of the objectives that we had set for ourselves and what was part of the Memorandum of Understanding is the Groundbreaker Program and Impinches, which are viewed to instill leadership skills among the youth and to also move into informal settlement and farming communities. So in that regard, on the issue of the Groundbreakers and the Impinches Leadership Program, definitely we have been getting quarterly reports from Love Life, and we're satisfied in that regard. But as Ms. Matlape indicated, with respect to the farming communities, there has been challenges, and we did have discussions with the Love Life to indicate our maybe some clear possible improvement in that regard to move into farming communities, especially given the fact that when we look at the epidemic currently, we have got quite a huge number or percentage of members in the farming communities, although that includes adults as well. But we cannot separate adults from the children, from the youth population. We have got a very high prevalence of HIV and AIDS in farming communities, and that's an area where we would like some improvement in that regard. And with respect to the GOGO program, especially the one that works with OBC, as you can see, the funding for GOGO programs come from the provincial budget. Yeah, so I can say that the Love Life program know very well that in the past 2 years we have been very vigorous, I can say, in terms of financial management, so that we can be able to identify what DSD actually is funding. So we have a committee within the department that on a quarterly basis, together with us and finance unit, we go to Love Life to go and look at their financials and work with them. And there has been quite a good improvement in that regard, and we got it from them that at least DSD is one of the key departments that really worked well and helped them to pick up on how they report to government in terms of finances. It was the first department that did it. I'm not sure if other departments have joined in to be vigorous when it comes to financial management for the Love Life program. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. We'll now give over to questions. Can I get an invitation from members? Twitter, Sheila, and Lana. Okay. That order?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think, let me start by thanking Love Life for giving us very informative presentation. I think members will agree with me that the reason why we said we want Love Life to come and do a presentation was the fact that there is money given to them by the social development. And we thought that it is very important for us to know exactly what they are doing with that money. And if you look at page of the annual report, page 82, is it 82 or 81? 81 is actually giving exactly the amounts given to social to Love Life by social development. That is 42 million, and this doctor said 42 million.
For this year.
Yeah, this year. Yes, thank you. But that is not much, Chair. 43 million is given to Love Life. And also the reason why we as Portfolio Committee of Social Development, our interest was whether Love Life does reach rural areas. And I can see, you know, on the presentation that you do reach the rural areas. And that was our concern, whether Love Life is only found in the urban areas. But my question, Chair, is around the stipend, which I have two questions. Around the stipend, which is on page 82, whether the stipend is given to groundbreakers or the go-go's, or, and also do we have a standardized stipend for all provinces? And I see that from the annual report, there are provinces that are not giving you the money, but you reach out, you do work in their provinces without them giving you the money. And I'm not going to mention all those. And the last question, Chair, is around challenges. Challenges, most challenges are around farm workers or farm communities. My question is, do you work with the labor department, because labor department would actually give you exactly the entry to the farms, whether, because I don't see and I don't hear you talking about the labor department. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Mashiro.
Thank you, Chair. Let me also thank the presenter for the information. But the part of the rural areas being covered by my colleague. But I wanted to check the areas of operations, because there was little mention of the Northwestern Gauteng operations when I talk about the rural areas. The areas like Hammanskraal, like Kavalatan, Hebron, and so forth, and Haram in particular, my constituents. There's the invisible thing, you know, 2001, 2002, there were a lot of visibility in terms of Love Life. In Medunsa, I used to see the tennis, the flags, Mafike, the stadium, the school sports. But this nowadays, I don't know, maybe I'm no more traveling a lot in those problems. I mean, in those provinces. But it seems the visibility is limited. If maybe we can just get an explanation, and maybe also to get the more areas operations in those provinces that were not mentioned. Because to my understanding, where I've been listening, Limpopo, Eastern Cape, and Eastern Cape are the province that the concentration is much there. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you, Love Life, for the information that you've given to us in the presentation, of course. Some of the things are very new in our ears. Not because you're not doing well, but because South Africa is so much. I just want to know, Love Life, do you register the CBOs and FBOs or small NGOs in deep rural areas with Love Life, so that you can work with them, so that they can get intensive training in whatever programs they are doing, which is similar to the programs of Love Life? And number two, is it possible, I didn't hear from Love Life, whether you've got the programs for substance abuse. In all the presentation, I was just listening, couldn't hear that. And I got very much worried, because when you talk of these sex, these condoms and everything, sometimes peer education helps, but peer influence also destroys the child and ending up doing these things under influence of Liga, of drugs. I'm sure you've heard of something called Cuba, which is sold in the shops. Yeah. But Cuba, they said it's not a drug. But when the child is putting it under the tongue, he will just come out and see, you know, sleeping like this, and the nose flowing, you don't know what is happening. And then she, if it's a girl, she becomes very active. Once a boy now. It is there in the place where I'm coming from, Rusigisiki.
Cuba.
Cuba.
it's a tablet. No.
No, it's something like Sen. They say it's something to make your breath, it smells nice. But at the end of the day, if you replace it, you put more under your tongue, you would need a man as in now. So the next thing, the child would sleep the whole day and unconscious. She could see things. She would just have a voice, but you don't understand. It's just sold almost in the police station. And I would think that the youth there, together with the teachers, are trying to do something, but they need your assistance as Love Life. So I'm so interested for you to have those small groups there. Let's start with you. Because most of the time, Love Life operates in towns and in bigger towns. I'm from all travel. For the first time, I saw a board of Love Life in a Pizana. And I said, there is Love Life here. It was just a shock to me, because I never heard even a person talking about Love Life. In fact, we can also assist in sending those people to you so that they can register with you and do the program that you are doing in the community there. Because we can't expect you to be everywhere in the corner of South Africa, of course. Thank you.
Thank you. Hi, I'm from Mamela Mula.
Thank you. As the department has gone through your presentation, most of my questions were covered, but I do have a few. Thank you for the presentation. I knew very little about Love Life because it was the first presentation this committee ever had. My first question then is, what percentage of your budget goes to admin costs in Love Life? And then you spoke on the Love Life train. Does that train also go to the rural areas? And I'm asking this because we do have challenges in our rural areas. I'm now speaking especially on my constituency, which is Witzenberg at this point in time, and the railway line cannot be used. We cannot even get access to our fellow, what the health train, fellow Pella health train. So, seeing that this is so rife in the rural areas and that attention needs to be focused on rural areas, what do you intend doing? Are you aware of our railway lines not being in use, which can add to employment in our areas, which can alleviate the spread of HIV and AIDS, and which even can give tourism to our areas, much needed tourism to our areas? How do you see you can help us out? How can you add to at least lifting those people in the rural areas in each and every way? And then, it's rather interesting, is that you do not have access to farms. My constituency consists of about 1,200 farms. And I really work in my area, especially on my farms. I would like to know whether you have any challenges facing farms in the Western Cape, especially in the Boland area, in getting access to farms to implement your programs. And my last question then is whether disabled persons are accommodated in your programs, especially in the rural areas. Is the rural and remote rural areas that suffer the most?
Thank you.
Thank you,
Chairperson.
Thank you.
Firstly, let me thank the presenter, Mrs. Matlabe, for your information this morning. It was really enlightening. At the same time, it gave us an opportunity to acknowledge what we are doing. My first question is on the annual report. It clearly says here you, your organization has a qualified audit opinion. And I just wanted to find out whether the trustee, are they remunerated by your organization? Why I'm saying this is because one of the things maybe that we need to receive the qualified audit opinion. It clearly says here that the trustee has not yet been, they have not yet prepared the consolidated financial statement. According, in other words, there is a non-compliance in accordance with South African statement of generally accepted accounting practice. That's my first question. And my second question is regarding the functional organogram. I would have appreciated if maybe you can give us in all the departments how many people are employed in the department, finance, and as stated here. So you didn't just give us the name of the, I don't know, is it the department or whatever. So if maybe you could have tell us how many people are employed there full time. And according to your budget, maybe you could have also stated in terms of percentage, how do you remunerate them? My other question is going back again to the challenges that has been alluded by my colleagues here, but mine is a little bit different direction. Whether do we have any plan of action in terms of how are you going to resolve those challenges as they are? And maybe are you having a time frame in terms of resolving those challenges? My other question, I also appreciate what your presentation, because it was more enlightening as compared to the other documents that were given to us. Because just talk of the impact assessment that you do, the research, but it never indicated that you also utilize other department to help you to do the research. Because I was asking myself, why don't you use other state institutions to help you to do the research? But my question based on the impact assessment and the research that we're doing, do you also align your program according to the outcome of the research that you just got? Because sometimes there's different departments, they just keep on doing research, but they don't align their activities according to the outcome. And my other question is regarding the partnership. You indicated that you are working with different stakeholders in different communities, NGOs and whatever. Is it possible that maybe as a committee, maybe given the organization in different provinces that you are working with, so that when we are doing oversight, we can also try to engage with them? My other question is regarding the schools. We have identified different schools in different provinces. I just wanted to find out whether you have any criteria to identify the different schools, or if there was no criteria, why there's no criteria, or how did you come up to identify those specific schools? I think I'll end up there, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Now, I think I want to align myself with the other members of the committee in thanking you for the presentation. I hope that you've learned your lesson that when you change your presentation, you have to provide the committee with insurance. Now, I've also looked at the audit opinion of the of Love Life and the qualified one. It doesn't look as if it's the issue on the new, maybe you could just explain to us the new Love Life issue that your auditor is mentioning, that it is in the next audit. Because if I look at what you've put into us, it's your latest financial statement, which is signed on 7 July 2011, which is quite recent, which is good, which means the information that you're giving us is old information. And then, let me just explain to us the new Love Life vis-a-vis, I don't know whether it's an old Love Life or what, but just explain those dynamics to us. Whether you had any issues with your funders around it, or whether, just the technicalities. The other issue, I want to raise two issues. The committee is interested in every organization that is part of the social development family. We have lots of organizations, and we also have in Soul City and so on.
Now, this train, I want to latch onto the question raised by Honorable Mimbala Mula. If we could get the schedule of the train, honorable members can then mobilize the constituencies even to get on board. But I want to propose to this committee that we should look at visiting the train, and we will stop somewhere. If we can get a ride also, it's been nice. But it will actually give us an insight into a section called youth development that we haven't given a lot of attention to as a committee. And if you look at all the challenges facing it, because I think Honourable Member Tomei just touched on the issue around substance abuse. And if you look at substance abuse, you see there are substances, new substances, all the time in the market. Whether they are legal or illegal, but they are there challenging their health and also the futures of our youth. The other issue is visiting one of your programs and your sites that you have. If you can give us, you've given us a map, but usually in your annual report you do have a section that you give addresses to or details to. If not, could you give us, provide the committee with a detailed address list of all the sites that you have, with contact numbers of the site managers and program managers. I think that would be good for members when they do their constituency work. They can also do oversight work at the same time in visiting the centres. I think if you look at the developmental stages of youth, it is very good for them to acquire life skills, because it's more often in society, in families, they do not get that life guidance in terms of the challenges facing them. So I think all those, the different interventions I think we should applaud you for the work that you're doing. The crucial importance for us as a committee is to know that you are all the funding that you're getting, whether it's from the UNFPA, whether it's from the social development or health, or sports, arts and culture, or sports, doesn't matter, that you give in the service that you render is value for money. Of course, you are dealing with such a crucial sector of our society in terms of if you look at the age cohort. I like the issue, the population pyramid that you've showed us. And I think the good news in terms of the infection rate declining in South Africa. I think we all aware by now that we have a very young population. The issue of the go-go letters, is there any plans to look at the growth or the increased rollout of the program? And I think, Matoma, the issue of this substance, what do you call it?
Uba, yes.
I think it is something that we need to write to the minister about, and the Central Drug Authority, to know are they aware of this, and to investigate this matter, usage. You know, you need yourselves up with the CDI, CDA. Yeah, so that they can see what is this. Because if you say people can buy it in shops, then we've got a big problem. Mm-hmm. Okay, over to you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for the questions. I'd like to introduce my colleagues, because I'd like to help them to help with the questions. Letisa Sobo is Love Life's Director of Communications and Government Relations. Scott Bennett is Love Life's Group Director for Research and Programs. Just with regards to the issue of statins, that was the first question. The first question was, are the stipends standards
in all provinces and so on. The content is exactly the same. That's another area where the department and ourselves have been, you know, the department has been unhappy with Blood Life for a little while in the interest of transparency. All the groundbreakers are on a stipend of 880 per month. And from this month, it's going to increase to 1,200, which is what the department wanted to do. It was just difficult because there are other groundbreakers that are not funded by social development and health. So to make sure that those that are funded by the Royal Bafokeng, for example, that all these funders can help increase the funding. So all the groundbreakers are on a stipend of, from this month, 1,200. The other part of the question was, do we get support for you know, what do we do? Do we still work in the provinces where there is no financial support? The partnership with social development is at two levels. There's the national department, which is the partnership we have with the Department of Community Security, where that's the 40 plus million rand per annum. And that is where that works across the country. It doesn't matter whether that province gives you any money or not. The target and the business plan is with the national department. The involvement of the province is in helping with the monitoring of the Lablas program, as the funding comes from national. But there are other provinces that then, over and above that, say, we want more, for example, Northwest will say, we want more groundbreakers in our province. Can you put, I'm not sure how many extra ground, but Northwest, for example, has extra groundbreakers that they pay for and increase. So that is the second layer of the partnership with social development. Similarly, with the Gogo Getta program, the Gogo Getta program up to now has been funded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. And the Mpumalanga and Northern Cape said over and above, Northern Cape, for example, they want Gogo Getta as much as they possibly could. There were just limitations with regard to the budget. And so wanted to have linked to some of their programs for often the vulnerable children, Gogo Getta included as part of their project program. So the partnership is at those two levels. No, we have not thought of working with the Labor Department with regards to funds, and I really appreciate that. I made contact with AgriForum, but we really have not had momentum in that partnership. So after the meeting with the department, also there was a pointer to the Agri Forum and perhaps renew that conversation. But also the Labour Department will take that proposal forward. Thank you very much. So with regards to visibility of Love Life, the issue was, so is Gauteng less important than Eastern Cape? No, it is not. The scale up of Love Life was determined by a number of things. So when you look at infection, the risk of infection in the country, you've got three clusters of provinces. You've got the high infection level provinces like Mpumalanga and KwaZulu-Natal. They are important to us. And in fact, when you look at the profile of those provinces, what we're talking about farms and urban informal settlements, poverty, unemployment, and those factors very much in keeping with why those are high prevalence provinces. And then there are the medium ones like Eastern Cape and so on. And then there are the lower ones like Western Cape. So in the first place, our scale-up is informed by risk of infection. In terms of the prevalence, but also in terms of the social indicators of risk. And because we follow what is the risk variant because our business is prevention. But in the second instance, the scale-up is also informed by demand. So in some provinces, for example, you find that there is a skewed presence in Western Cape for a province that doesn't have as much risk of infection as others. The presence in Western Cape is high for Love Life. But that is because in partnership with the Department of Health and Department of Education, they got funding for Love Life from the Western Cape, from the Global Fund. There was a Western Cape Global Fund partnership. And that's, and invited Love Life to work with them to ensure that as many schools are reached as possible. So that increased the presence of Love Life in the Western Cape. But it doesn't mean that Gauteng is not important, because it certainly is. Gauteng does have a lot, like the Eastern Cape and some of the very urban provinces. They do actually have a lot of the urban informal communities that is a priority for Richard Lovelock. All the provinces are important. But I mentioned earlier that as we focus more and more on sustained face-to-face interaction, the part of Love Life that are perhaps event-based, media-based, you know, the sort of the medium impact strategies of Love Life went down a little bit. So Love Life is doing better than ever, but Love Life is not as visible as it used to be. That is what I personally would like. That is why I mentioned that as a challenge, because it's important that South Africans feel that Love Life exists, that it still exists in the same way. And I want to be able to make you get that Love Life actually exists in an even better way, but may not be as visible as we possibly can. We haven't really succeeded in... Love Life's budget is large. And even though I've shown you that we have reached more and more young people with the same amount of money for the past 10 years, pretty much, the pressure is that you get to a point where you've got to do trade-offs. And if the money is not increasing, what are you willing to sacrifice? And it's a difficult decision to make. I want both media and face-to-face interaction, because I want South Africans to have confidence in the impact, the success of Love Life. And what builds that is the media visibility. And I'm afraid we have to take the difficult decision to reduce that in favor of something that gives us greater returns. And for example, the cell phone program, which is really, truly powerful, and one day when we have time, we will take you through that. When we introduced that, a lot of that money came from the budget we used to have for billboards. And if you look around, there's hardly any Love Life billboards. The Love Life billboards that exist is where the companies have not sold that inventory. And they're old, old billboards. So we've had to sacrifice the billboards so that we can have young people that don't have access to cell phones being able to be connected with opportunity and other information that's important to them. So I would love to have all of them, but difficult trade-offs have to be made. Do we register CBOs and NGOs in deep rural communities for capacity building? That is the cornerstone of our approach, because we use the franchise model means an organizational relationship between Love Life and other community-based organizations. That is how we scale up. So to increase Love Life's presence means identifying CBOs in those communities that we want to be in, that agree with us with the strategy, the principles, and put young people first, pretty much, in terms of HIV risk and HIV prevention. And those are the CBOs that we're looking for. So the reason why we have the number that we have and not more is usually budget driven. That's a whole cost driver. When you identify an NGO that you want to work with, say you want to expand to Nongoma, you identify an NGO in that area, we would have to train those people, we would have to identify groundbreakers in those areas, recruit the groundbreakers, recruit them into, take the groundbreakers to leadership development. So all of that is a key cost driver of Love Life. Every site we identify is a new set of costs. So the reason that we have the ones that we have is because that is as far as we were able to get with the funding that we have. So as we look for more funding, we would be able to reach more NGOs that we can work with. Or as certain other NGOs no longer participate in Love Life, what we've also found is that some of the first generation NGOs we worked with, when we started the franchise program, they grow also for other reasons. You know, whether they grow because in the association with Love Life, they have access to other corporate funders or whatever. We have not measured that for me to take any measure of credit at all. But for whatever reason, as soon as they grow and they get to a certain level, some of them feel that they grow and expand into other satellite sites that they then help to support and increase the Love Life network. Sometimes they decide they want to terminate their relationship with Love Life to focus on other things because their donors say so. So when that opportunity arises, we get an opportunity then to find another NGO in that community that we train again and get ground with us to them and make sure that they are supported. So we would love to work with the CBOs. We must just think about how we can increase the number of NGOs we work with without necessarily increasing the cost too much, so that we can accommodate what you are asking. So deep rural, I can't remember what, but the issue of the point you were making about the deep rural areas. Rural areas are a priority for us for access, just for people to feel connected, for young people to feel that they're also part of something. They are not marginalized, they don't know what's going on, they've never, you know. So they're important to us for that reason. But I do just want to make a point that even informal settlement is where we have a serious problem in South Africa, and farms is where we have a serious problem in South Africa. Just with regards to substance abuse, you know, what I've presented to you is not the subject, the content that we share with young people. If we brought that, we would have a pile of books this time. Because as new information comes in, we design based on the research that we are aware of, we pull it into content that groundbreakers are then trained in, and the groundbreakers then use that content to go facilitate these interactions with young people. So I say to you that there is I've never heard of Cuba, I have to be very honest. I'm distressed to hear about something like this that can even be over the counter. That is distressing. But there is a certain element of substance abuse in our content. The bigger part of our content is not to try and deal with every issue that impacts on the life of young people, but to focus on strengthening the young person, to get the young person themselves that's complete, rather than every issue that pops up that is of risk to them. Having said that, I'm not saying the issues of substance abuse are not, they are absolutely critical. In the study that I quoted earlier that RHRU did of evaluating Love Life, it came out as one of the important factors, the high-risk behavior as a result of drinking alcohol. It's a serious problem. What we would like is to understand what makes young people choose high-risk behavior in the first place. So that, you know, that. But we probably, you know, have to keep that, which we do, we keep the design process ongoing so that, you know, the content that we share is as relevant as possible, as they, you know, as late as enough people can identify with it. So we'll just follow up the issue of Cuba and just see. I'd be very interested because we have a cooperation with Soul City on their PizzaWise campaign. I'd be very interested what the PizzaWise team's opinion is of that. Okay. All right. So here's the breakdown. This is the expenditure, the percentage of budget in terms of. So that is the support cost is 24%. Program. This is for the just the government funders. And program cost 76%. This is just rough, but it's, you know, one of the things that I immediately see when I look at this, for example, is research. You know, it's shown a support cost, but research is a critical output when you are dealing with subjects like what we're doing. That is a moving target. You've got to move with it. So it's so much support cost, it should be falling below that. But it gives you a rough sense of what. Of what the admin
as a professional. Now, let me just correct you to say you shouldn't feel bad about this. Is it 24%?
Yes.
Mm. Yeah, now it's a very good percent for admin support as a percentage of your budget. I think up to 36% you are classified as being very efficient.
I mean, you know, if you remember that graph I showed you, that showed our cost efficiency. That showed we were sitting at 600 per young person, just saying down to about 100 grand. You know, we struggled to pull it down. And I mean, if we stretch it even further, it would be at the cost of something. So we did start at a rather high ratio. And it's something that the board of Love Life and myself have worked on. It's identified as something that. But I mean, I also think 24%, a little on the high side, but we can live with it. Does the train go to rural areas? You know, if we were able to actually have a Love Life department in Transnet, this would be one of the things we would do. The difficulty is that the rail system in South Africa is no longer managed like it used to. So we get a rail plan. We identify where we want to go. And when the plan comes back to us, we told, well, sorry, we can't go to Brazil, we can't go to work because that rail has not been maintained. When you go there, there's grass growing under the rail. So it curtails it limits the places where you can go. And this is a very popular part of Love Life. The young people love a train. It's a big purple train. It's like, it gives them a sense of a Love Life wise center that it comes to their community for 2 weeks, once a year or something. So it's something that we would have loved to be able to get to the communities that we want to go to. And at some point, I think South Africa also stopped growing the rail system, and the taxi network took over from a certain central point to take people to point of destination. So the rail, the train gives you access up to here, but it doesn't take you everywhere else. It is very much still something I'd love to keep and grow if we aim to do. At the moment, the train is funded by Lotto. So we hope that we'll be able to get, at least keep the train on track. Because it's such a critical part of what we do. And not one that is always visible, you know, because I would have to go on television for the whole week every day just to tell people, now the train has gone somewhere, now the train. Otherwise, South Africans don't see the train except the people where the train goes.
Through the chair, you can easily work through your municipality.
Okay. No. You see, Honorable Muller is out of order. That's how she made the comment without the mic. So don't call me that. Because you have to speak through me.
Sorry, Jay, sorry, but this is Brazil. If I can just come in there. I am at present Brazil, getting all organizations together, and I think you can also give me motivation there. To speak to the provincial MEC for transport, and he's very much into it, that we open up the railway line, because the area that I'm really very concerned about is the Wittenberg area. We are the poorest, one of the poorest areas in the Western Cape. We do have a high HIV/AIDS rate and TB rate and unemployment rate. So we are really faced with so many challenges, and we need to work with them. So let me just ask you for a letter of motivation so that we can get to the rural youth too.
Can you talk after this?
Thank you.
Because we're running out of time. Mm-hmm. But about first. It's already 22, right? Mm-hmm. 22. Okay.
Okay. I'll ask Scott Bennett to just with a few other program specific queries. Let me just deal with the issue of the qualification of the audit report, please. One question just to deal with quickly is,
could you please put on your mic?
Oh, sorry.
Just the issue of the qualification. Are the trustees remunerated? No, the trustees are not remunerated at all. Everything that they do, the involvement in that life is on a voluntary basis. They meet 4 times a year in the board, at the board level, the trustees as a board, and each one of them participates in a subcommittee. There are 5 subcommittees. And so that ensures their involvement in the fundraising, in remuneration, and personnel issues, audit and risk, program strategy, as well as communication. So there's a detailed involvement of the trustees. The qualification is for one reason. We have, as part of a sustainability plan for Love Life, there's a trust that was established a number of years ago that looks at building long-term sustainability by acquiring equity as a broad-based economic empowerment partner in companies in South Africa. It's separate trust with a separate set of trustees. Our auditors came to the opinion that that trust has got to be consolidated into Love Life because Love Life is the sole beneficiary of, it's called Kurisani. Because Love Life is the sole beneficiary of Kurisani, Love Life's financials have got to be, Kurisani has got to be consolidated into Love Life. So it didn't please me, clearly made me very upset, but there, because the consolidated report was not available for, because when you have a consolidated report, that's what you must publish. That is what is required for good governance. You must publish the consolidated report because then you are being transparent. But the consolidated report was not ready in time to be included in the annual report. So the Love Life specific report then has to be qualified so that the reader realizes that this is not all the report. This is not the full financial information that's available for the organization. So that's the only reason that we can't see an adverse report. The report that just says there's another consolidation somewhere that can, so we have to wait for the meeting of the board so that is going to be, will be approved and accepted by that board. But I have a meetings now in August to present Love Life stakeholders. And I couldn't wait for the meeting that is going to happen in October. That is the only reason. That it's not an adverse report in any form. I'm going to have to get a letter from the auditors so that at least my main partners understand that this is not an adverse report. Okay. Do you want to just
elaborate that? Sure. Thank you very much. Just to say thank you very much to the Honourable Chairperson for suggesting that we share our sites table with this committee with contact details, because I think that would give everybody a really good sense of the communities that our sites are in. I was just, while you were talking here, getting the schedule of the Love Train.
Mm.
So in January, we were in the Eastern Cape. We did Stutterheim for a week, then Craddock for a week, then Grahamstown for a week. The following week, we were in the Western Cape, and we were in George, then Swellendam, then Vredendal, so larger towns, then Kraaifontein, then Goodwood, so we were in Cape Town, then up to Colesberg. So it does tend to be driven by Spoonet's sort of ability at certain levels, but I love the idea of involving members of this committee in helping with that schedule and with inviting to the platforms to come and see what we do. I think it would be a wonderful, and also to mobilize beforehand to get the municipalities involved. This part of our model, our national coordinator goes to the station a week before the train comes to mobilize with the local community, but a week is not necessarily always the best lead time, so there are improvements we could make to that model. As far as access to our programs go, for disabled people in rural areas, I think for disabled people in general, we've struggled to find the right program model across a range of disabilities that would give young people from all backgrounds access to our models. It's an area that we continually are engaging in. So, for example, for deaf young people, we recently partnered on a series of events that are like the Love Life Games, that are experiential lifestyle events for young people. But we do need the specific partners, like that particular partner in the deaf community was able to give us access to that community. That works nicely. But yes, it is an ongoing challenge to get that kind of access. Most of our program material is written material. Our sporting programs aren't necessarily disabled friendly. And it is, you know, where one needs to balance the needs of the young person against the scale of the programs. And our approach there is to find specialist partner organizations to expand the number of schools we work with that deal with disabled learners. The plan of action for resolving some of these challenges with a time frame, we're currently in a very exciting strategic planning process with our board, which a lot of the feedback that's coming from our stakeholders, from this committee, etc., is being channeled. We're also doing national consultation with our staff and with our groundbreakers and inventions to get input into our strategy. That's going to be a strategy for the next 3 years. Many of you will know that we also consulting on the new national strategic plan for HIV/AIDS next week. So these processes are all coming together at the same time to really ensure that the next 3 years of Love Life are aligned with the best practice in HIV prevention, and that we are absolutely taking all of this feedback into account. Grace mentioned that my title is Group Director for Research and Programs. The alignment of research with programming is for us fundamental. As we learn things about young people, about HIV, they immediately need to be translated into real program change, because young people change very quickly. Adolescents are a very mobile market, and so research is absolutely crucial. We're quite aware that in the biomedical fraternity, for example, treatment as prevention, the latest advances in pre-exposure prophylaxis and a number of different technologies might fundamentally change the way that HIV is prevented in South Africa. Likewise, the way that young people interact with technology and the growing move towards different types of phones is another trend that we're very interested in. And of course, research into our own effect and whether we are having an effect has been an ongoing part of our program design processes and needs to be in perpetuity. I will be sending as much of that detail to the secretary of this committee. Lindy Wen. I'll send you all of the contact details and the addresses so that all of the members can have those. I think Grace, if you could talk about old Love Life versus new Love Life. The only other program issues here. Yes, can we increase? Yes, we would love to increase Google. We would dearly love to increase Google Gators. When the Gates Foundation decided to focus on a different issue, the international foundations are fickle. They have their favorite issues from year to year. Gates decided that OVC was no longer their area of interest. They encouraged us to find a local funder for Google Gators. We haven't yet been able to find a large local funder. The Department of Health is very kindly supporting the program at a national level. And as Dr. Kanaka pointed out just now, a couple of provincial social development departments have come on board also. The expansion, the continued growth of the program is budget dependent, and we have a fundraising team that's busy doing their best, doing their utmost to grow this program, because we think it's a program that really really has real legs and real impact on South Africa. Oh, sorry. Our target for schools is 100% of schools, including private schools, including whatever the school is. And so we don't exclude any school from our from our implementation model. There's a kind of a natural exclusion process that happens when you identify where a groundbreaker will be placed. The Mbichis and groundbreakers have a small transport allowance that allows them to use public transport within that community. It isn't a lot of money. So it means that they aren't often able to reach very far beyond that community. We did experiment a few years ago with buying all our Mbichis bicycles. But of course that needs to go along with training people in how to fix bicycles, and so we had a bit of a mismatch there. We've tried to expand the net of the Mbichi and the Groundbreaker as wide as it can go. But certainly we're in Model C schools and we're in farm schools. We're in, you know, the full range of schools across the country. For us, the major criteria is that that school has access to young people who are between the ages of 12 and 19 as our core targets for market. And I think that's it. There you are. Just very quickly on Cuba. We've engaged, in fact, Dr. Khanaka and I were presenting at a recent conference on substance abuse in Durban, where a lot of these issues were being explored and discussed. One of the things that we feel as LoveLife can contribute is our risk reduction model, which Mrs. Matlabe presented, understanding why people would take drugs in the first place. So that sense of helplessness, conforming to negative social norms, and the sense that there's not real possibility in their lives. So we absolutely address those, and we do explicitly talk about alcohol and drugs in our program. And as we said, partnering with Soul City on trying to get great content there. The problem, of course, with these things is that once somebody's addicted to it, it's in a different intervention entirely. Psychosocial isn't going to cut it. You're going to need a real sort of medical type intervention with that young person to get them off the addiction.
So the issue of the new LoveLife Trust and LoveLife was just a technicality, because LoveLife was registered as a trust. And it was a trust after Section 21 NGO that was a consortium with PPA, the Planned Parenthood Organization, and other NGOs. So in that trust, the first original LoveLife Trust, there was unfortunately reference to that Section 21. And you cannot amend the object of the trust. Legally, you are unable to amend the object of the trust. So we had to then register a new trust so that we can move reference to the Section 21. And we had a little bit of difficulty with the transition, but we basically know, we trade as LoveLife. The new LoveLife is the official legal name that is published in the annual report, but we know as LoveLife. So there hasn't really been, that was done just before I took over as the CEO, and I expect that the transition was managed properly at that time. We would love to host the committee at our site. We would also love to host the committee on the train. We really appreciate the fact that we were able to have this meeting that will ensure that you understand what we are doing. So that we at all times feel like this partnership is a partnership, that it's a relationship where we can grow, and as Dr. Khanaka was saying, we get certain things right and we don't always get everything right. And so we would welcome a partnership that, you know, that would approach this as a possibility to build on what we've already been getting right and get your involvement as much as possible. So we would love to get you involved, and we will get register would, if she was available, if it was possible, be able to coordinate a visit to the sites based on your schedule. So when you are in the communities, whether we look at local and we get you to LoveLife where you already work, which is part of your constituency, or we host, like I know that the Kaiser Foundation used to do in the past with the portfolio communities, host the whole team in different sites, which would obviously then involve social development to come along. But we'd love to host you for you to experience LoveLife. And thank you very much for the opportunity.
Social event? Do you want
to say anything? I wanted to just thank the committee on the invitation of LoveLife. In that, I think we are grateful for your summoning us to come here so that we see what the LoveLife is doing. And also, we appreciate your oversight. I think some of the comments that I've mentioned is what we are going to include in the next agreement we have with LoveLife as we proceed, and also ensure that the issue of HIV AIDS is much more broad, and if it's broad, an approach which we always call in the HIV AIDS area is no-miss approach. Not only one, but everyone that can deal with HIV AIDS appropriately need to be supported so that we can reach each and every person, and especially because it's amongst the young people. So we have seen a lot of things, what Love Life have done as an extension of the government, the new approach. There are many innovativeness which I think they didn't mention. We really appreciate that. I think you act as a support for the department to say which direction we need to take, what approach we need to do so that we can deal with issues of HIV AIDS appropriately. Chairperson and the community, thank you very much. And feel free to add and to write and to be sure that we improve on what we are doing. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, honorable members, Love Life, Executive of Love Life, as well as the senior managers from Social Development. Honorable members, we've come to the end of a very interesting presentation. I'm sure you found it very informative, and that you will exchange business cards and so on after the meeting. We will have another separate portfolio committee meetings where we will deliberate on the way forward in terms of our engagement, a further engagement with Love Life. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.